from KQED.
Welcome back to this morning's forum. I'm Michael Krasny. President Trump today defended his decision to remove U.S. troops from the Syria-Turkey border. He's been facing criticism from fellow Republicans who say they were blindsided by the decision. The move clears the way for Turkey's plan to mount a military offensive against U.S. allied Kurds in Syria. And in an early morning string of tweets today, the president wrote, quote, "We may be in the process of leaving Syria, but in no way have we abandoned the Kurds, who are special people and wonderful fighters," end of quote. But even Trump allies like Lindsey Graham say that the U.S. is, in fact, betraying the Kurds. The president threatened to destroy Turkey's economy if it attacks the Kurds. But Turkey's vice president said today that his country would not react to threats and an attack may be imminent. Joining us to talk about Trump's actions and the turmoil in the Middle East is Nubi Bulos. He's Middle East correspondent with the L.A. Times. He's based in Amman, and we welcome you to the program. Good to have you.
Fine. Thank you so much for having me.
We also have Amanda Sloat with us, and we'll say good morning to her. She's Robert Bosch, Senior Fellow in the Center on the United States and Europe, Brookings Institution. And we welcome you back to Forum, Amanda Sloat.
Thank you.
Let me begin, if I may, Nubi Bulos, with you. And let's begin by talking about what this pullout of American forces will actually mean. It's at the border, but certainly Turkey, while America's pulling out, or when America pulls out, Turkey will move in. And Prime Minister Erdogan has labeled the Kurds, our allies and our friends, worse than ISIS and terrorists. And so this is seen by many, particularly even President Trump's fellow Republicans, as a betrayal of the Kurds and a kind of treachery against the Kurds.
Well, so it's worth saying that for Turkey, this is akin to, I mean, imagine if someone had allied themselves with Al-Qaeda. Right. This is basically how the Turks feel about the U.S.'s, alliance with the Kurds. They see them as essentially an offshoot of a Kurdish separatist movement that they've been fighting for decades over in Turkey. And for them, the YPG, or I should say the People's Protection Units, which is the Kurdish force, they see it as linked to that terror group, or what they call and classify a terror group. So this is the first issue. In terms of how the pullout will look like, actually, really, no one knows at this point. I mean, the fact is, this sort of push and pull has been happening between Turkey and the U.S. for quite some time now. I mean, the U.S. has managed to essentially stall and water down these various announcements by Trump regarding, what a pullout will look like. They've essentially slowed down some of the places the withdrawal have happened. And in this particular case, they basically have only, I think, evacuated two positions near two towns called Ras al-Abyad. They're named Ras al-Ain and Tal Abyad. So we're talking about not very many soldiers at this point that have left. And it should also be noted that America has about 16 bases dotting the northeastern region of Syria. So it'll be quite some time before they actually completely withdraw. And I don't see the Turks going in before that.
Well, on that point, President Trump, and I'm going to read what he says earlier. This is extraordinary, even for President Trump. If Turkey does anything that I, in my great and unmatched wisdom, that's direct from the tweet, consider to be off limits, I will totally destroy and obliterate its economy. There again is the president flexing his muscles like lock and load and all the rest of it. It doesn't seem to be daunting to the Turks, though. And there is real fear, and I think legitimate fear, isn't there, Nubi Bulos, that the Turks will come in and just massacre and commit a form of ethnic cleansing?
Well, so, I mean, we can look towards the enclave of Afrin. So sorry, there's a bit of noise behind me. It's the call to prayer at this point in Amman. So if there's a bit of noise, I apologize. But in any case, what's happening right now in Afrin is for many Kurds what is the prologue of what happened to them over in northeastern Syria. So that enclave, which was Kurdish run for a long time, was taken over by the Turks in 2018. And since then, there have been reports of hundreds of thousands of Kurds being displaced. You also have the issue of ethnic cleansing, or perhaps even demographic change, whereby you have other Syrian refugees taking over the homes of the former Kurdish owners. So this basically is the main fear of Kurds in that area. It should also be noted that the Turks are also using Syrian rebels who despise the Kurds and have seen them for a long time during the Syrian civil war as both atheists and separatists who don't want to maintain the territorial integrity of Syria. So they obviously have no love towards them. And this is one of the main issues now, that you can expect basically rampant abuse, possibly a massacre, but I would say that the more likely you would have mass displacement.
Nubi Bulos, again, is Middle East correspondent with the LA Times. He is based in Amman, and I appreciate very much your being with us this morning. Thank you. Let me go back, let me go to Amanda Sloat, who is Robert Bosch Senior Fellow in the Center on the United States and Europe with the Brookings Institution. The critics are saying, Amanda Sloat, this is it's good for Putin, it's good for Iran, it's great for ISIS.
I think there certainly are concerns that that could be the outcome of Trump's decision. With U.S. forces on the ground in Syria, it has given the U.S. a foothold there. They've been able to help manage the situation between Turkey and these YPG fighters. And they have also controlled an area of Syria with the YPG that Russia and the Iranians have not been as active in. So the concern is certainly that if the United States leave, it creates a bit of a vacuum that Russia and Iran could fill. And there is also concern that the YPG will need to turn their attention away from focusing on the remaining remnants of ISIS in order to defend themselves against the Turks, in addition to potentially pulling away some of the YPG fighters that are guarding ISIS fighters that they have captured on the battlefield.
This certainly leaves the Kurdish forces open to attack, and I'm wondering if you could describe for the listeners what Erdogan is talking about when he's talking about a safe space.
So Erdogan has wanted a safe space for many years. This actually dates back to when the United States first started operating in Syria back in 2014. Erdogan has had two primary concerns. One, he has been trying to keep these YPG fighters off of his border because of the links between the YPG and the PKK. And second, he has been concerned about the fact that his country has been flooded with Syrian refugees. There are currently over 4 million Syrians who are living in Turkey. And so Erdogan has sought to construct a safe space with the dual objective of pushing these Kurdish forces off its border and also creating a space to return refugees to Syria.
Let's talk about President Trump's defense of this, which was done, according to most reports, very haphazardly, and it took Department of Defense by surprise. It also may have been the reason why Jim Mattis resigned, one of the adults in the room, as he was described, from being Secretary of Defense. But President Trump has said we were supposed to be in Syria for only 30 days, and he talked about defeating the caliphate again, which is certainly arguable, and said that we gave massive amounts of money to the Kurds. It's time to bring our soldiers home, and he only wants to fight in things that will benefit the United States and that we can win.
It's certainly no secret that President Trump has not wanted to be in Syria. We saw him run the exact same play a year ago, last December, when he talked to President Erdogan on the phone. He announced plans to withdraw U.S. forces. After there was pushback, he tweeted threats to destroy the Turkish economy. And then we ended up remaining largely in Syria. And so we saw a very similar sequence of events play out again yesterday. He is looking to fulfill his campaign pledge to bring Americans home. The problem is that we only have a residual force there who is working with these YPG fighters. And so the concern, as we discussed a few minutes ago, is that if you remove these forces, it could end up allowing the Islamic State to reconstitute and to become a threat again in Syria as well as Iraq.
And there are ISIS sleeper cells that are essentially plotting to free all of the 12,000 that are detained. And this could have a major effect on, as you've described it, a resurgence of ISIS. So we're talking to Amanda Sloat again, who is Robert Bosch Senior Fellow in the Center on the United States and Europe with the Brookings Institution. Let me bring in you, our callers and listeners, to this conversation. I know many of you have questions and comments, and we welcome your involvement. You can give us a call right now at our toll-free number. The number is 866-733-6786. We invite you to join us again, toll-free, 866-733-6786. And you can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions you might have to forum@kqed.org. And a listener writes, I know they have their own interests, but the Kurds have been helping us out since the Gulf War, and we've screwed them over repeatedly. At least Trump seems to be backtracking a little. Here's to hoping he keeps backtracking. Would you say that that's an apt description here, Amanda Sloat, backtracking by the president?
Well, it's very unclear to know where Trump is on a given day because there's been a lot of confusion over the last 24 hours in terms of what exactly the U.S. policy is. There certainly have been concerns about the U.S. position with the Kurds. It is important to note that there are multiple factions of Kurds. The Kurds that the United States worked with in Iraq are actually a different group of Kurds than the ones that we have been working with in Syria. The concern that Erdogan has had about the YPG, which are the Kurds that we've been supporting in Syria, is that they are directly affiliated with the PKK. And they have been fighting an armed insurgency against the Turkish state for decades and have resulted in over 40,000 deaths. And so from the Turkish perspective, they see an existential threat to the Syrian Kurdish fighters controlling a large swath of territory in Syria that they have managed to clear away from the Islamic State. And so the U.S. government really faces a policy conundrum in the sense that we have legitimate security concerns by our NATO ally Turkey, and at the same time, rightly need to defend these Syrian Kurdish partners who shed a large amount of blood in fighting alongside the United States to defeat ISIS.
Another comment from a listener named Enrique says, if we back the Kurds, Turkey may align with Russia, and this would shift the entire strategic balance of the region. Is it worth it, he asks. Well, I would ask you, if I may, Amanda Sloat, how can the United States actually avoid a leadership vacuum with respect to not only Russia, but Iran filling?
Well, many would argue that the United States over the last number of years has already created a leadership vacuum given the previous administration's decision not to get more actively involved in Syria. Certainly, once Russian forces became involved in 2015, they ended up propping up the regime and they controlled a large amount of the airspace in the northwestern side of Syria. The challenge for Turkey is that Turkey and Russia really are working at cross purposes in Syria. Russia is bolstering the regime, and Erdogan, from the beginning of the Syrian civil war, has wanted to see the Assad regime collapse. At the same time, Turkey is dependent on Russia to a certain extent because of how much territory it controls along with the regime in Syria. Interestingly, the Russians had also been backing the YPG fighters, and yet, as the previous speaker had mentioned, the Turks went in and cleared this territory in Afrin. That was the area where the Russian backed YPG fighters had been operating. And so Russia withdrew its advisors and essentially gave a green light to Turkey to conduct that military operation in 2018.
Again, if you'd like to join us, you can give us a call right now at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. And Jorge writes, saying that Trump is wanting to bring the troops out of Syria overlooks that many American people who also want to get out of these countries, sooner the better. And I think the point is understood. Your thoughts, Amanda Sloat?
There certainly is some truth to that. The American people are very tired of what's been called the forever wars. We've been in Afghanistan for over 18 years. We had a long military operation in Iraq, where we still are. We conducted military operations in Libya, and we now have forces in Syria. And so on one hand, it's very understandable that people want to see the United States downsize its presence in these countries and continue to question why we are there. At the same time, I think in the case of Syria, you can argue that we actually have a fairly limited footprint and that most of what we have been doing there has been in support of local Syrian fighters, including this faction of Syrian Kurds who have been doing a lot of the heavy lifting on the ground in furtherance of our national security objective of defeating the Islamic State.
It's certainly true, though, that we gave air cover to the Kurds, but they were really the main fighters against ISIS. And if there was any triumph against ISIS, they take a lion's share of the credit. And you have to ask about not only the kind of, backing away from the Kurds, who are our allies, that people like Lindsey Graham have been howling about, but also that there are massive displacements, I mean, predictably, that are going to go on, and more civilian suffering, as well as probably a resurgence of ISIS. But let me bring some callers on here, and we'll start with you, Mark. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, thank you. Two questions that go together. One, can somebody quantify the benefit to Russia by this shift in the policy? And two, given the answer to question one, is there any indication or evidence that benefiting Russia is the intention behind the policy?
Hey, Amanda Sloat, talk about the benefit to Russia. I don't know if we can divine whether or not there's a benefit that could have been worked out with the president and his, for example, private talks with Putin and Finland and the like. But let's hear what you have to say, Amanda.
I know it's easy to ascribe nefarious motives to some of Trump's policies, but it is not clear at all that that is what is driving this. I think it relates back to what we talked about earlier, which is that Trump has not wanted to have American forces in Syria any longer than necessary. I think one of the most likely outcomes of a Turkish incursion is that the YPG could end up cutting some sort of deal with the Syrian regime. The YPG has never, in fact, disavowed the regime and cut their ties with them. So given that Russia is backing the regime, if the United States left, if Turkey came in, and if the YPG then aligned with the regime as a means of protecting themselves against Turkey, that would expand significantly the amount of territory that the Syrian regime controls. And that would largely be in Russia's benefit by empowering the regime and also getting the United States out of the way.
Well, the Obama administration dreams of replacing Assad have certainly gone up in smoke or in whatever you want to call it in all this war and all the geopolitics behind it. I'm also interested in the fact that the Trump family has business interests in Turkey. Specifically, there's that Trump Tower in Istanbul, and Donald Trump called it a magnificent project. And there was a tweet that was discovered that was sent by Ivanka Trump. It was a while back in 2012, but she said to Prime Minister Erdogan, thank you so much for the help in launching Trump Towers in Istanbul. One has to ask the question about how much this may be tied to business interests. Any thoughts on that, Amanda Sloan?
I think, as I said to the previous question, it is possible to ascribe various motives to the president's decision making on these types of issues. But I think the fact remains that Trump has been very consistent about wanting to get U.S. troops out of Syria.
Another caller joining us, and that's you, David. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. So I believe that Donald Trump is just doing this now just to throw a smokescreen and get the news narrative changed from impeachment. He's clearly guilty. That's my opinion. What do you guys think?
That is your opinion. Again, it's hard to divine President Trump's chess moves or what they involve in the way of premeditation. Any thoughts, Amanda Sloat, though, about diverting the news of impeachment here?
I'm just going to sound a bit like a broken record here, but the one thing that is striking is that this follows the exact same play that we saw in December 2018 in terms of the president speaking to Erdogan, the president making a rather garbled announcement that led to official resignation, garbled efforts to try and explain what was happening, and then economic threats to the Turks. So it's certainly possible that the president's calculus have changed, but his actions remain remarkably consistent to what they were in December 2018. And if the president was thinking that this was going to be a way to curry favor with his base, it's failed because there has been very strong bipartisan condemnation of his decision, including, as you said, from one of his biggest advocates, Senator Lindsey Graham.
Who likes to describe the president as his golfing partner. Lindsey Graham described this as impulsive and short-sighted and irresponsible, no less. And Marco Rubio and other Republicans have come out fairly strongly on this. You would have to ask if the president knew he was going to alienate his base and some of his fellow GOP, especially GOP members of the Senate, who will, if there's an impeachment going forward, decide in the trial what the president's fate is, that he would perhaps go along with this. But this is all speculation, as we've been saying. Hashem writes, though, a listener named Hashem says, the U.S. is once more doing its favorite trick on the Kurds, which is cut and run. This is not the first time, nor will it be the last. The U.S. did the same in Iraq in 2011, leaving it to be consumed by Iran. Let me go to another caller, and that's Jack. Jack, join us.
Hi. I had a question about what this means for the YPG. I'm not sure if you know, but they're a very interesting anarchist democratic model of government, and what this might mean for models of similar governments and societies in the Middle East.
Amanda Sloat.
That is true that the YPG have socialist Marxist roots, and they have been trying to set up governance mechanisms in the territory that they control. Certainly one of the concerns about a possible Turkish incursion is that it could end up being very destabilizing to a region within a war-torn country that actually is starting to return to some degree of normality. There's also concerns about Turkish action triggering a humanitarian crisis and newfound refugee flows.
And let me thank the caller and read a comment from Margot, one of our listeners, who writes, all this confusion over what President Trump has decided about withdrawing troops from Syria only underscores his ineptitude and lack of a cogent foreign policy. He really does not understand the global implications of what he does. And we'll go to another caller, and that's you, Elliot. Join us. Thank you for waiting.
Thank you. So my question is, I think, fairly straightforward. If the main U.S. objective in being in Syria is to be able to extirpate ISIS, why aren't the Turks military, if they do carry out this strategy, just as capable of controlling ISIS as the Kurds are with U.S. involvement?
Amanda Sloat.
I think that's a very good question, and it was part of what appealed to President Trump last December when Erdogan had suggested that if the U.S. left, he could take over responsibility. I think there is some concern that Turkey does not necessarily have full military capabilities to be able to do a lot of what the United States has been doing on the ground. For example, the United States has been doing a lot of the aerial surveillance and the targeting of potential ISIS fighters that ground troops have then gone after. Turkey is part of the global coalition to fight the Islamic State. Turkey has been participating as part of the coalition in some of these broader military operations that have been happening in Syria. But there's questions about whether or not Turkey would be capable of doing all of that itself without U.S. involvement.
Let me thank the caller, and here's a comment from Greg, who writes, leaving troops in Syria would only be to maintain the U.S. global military empire. And we'll go to another caller, and that's Jim. Jim, join us.
Yeah, I have a comment. I just wonder if you want to poke holes in it, if there is any. But I see the YPG as the enemy of the enemy is my friend. They haven't been helping us for altruistic reasons. They want to carve out a country in Syria just like they did, and they're brethren did in Iraq, and they want, it's a territorial aims. They would just, I think it's just benefiting them to be allies with us. Their other side of the coin across the border, PKK, which is, they're not different. They're the same side, you know, same people here. I've been designated terrorists by both Turkey and by us. And they're against us there, and they're with us here. It's just to serve their aims. So I don't see why we're crying over or being sad or all these emotional, oh, we're cutting and running, when this is really just it was benefiting us for a while, and they're in it for themselves.
Jim makes, I think, yeah, thank you, Jim, for that. I think Jim makes some fair salient points, and I want to go back to you, man, on this, Amanda Sloat. Clearly, the Kurds are trying to carve out some territory for themselves, and the United States is with Turkey in condemning and naming them terrorists.
I think
the Turkish Kurds,
he's...
that is, yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
He's absolutely right. And certainly what he laid out is the argument that the Turkish government is making. And frankly, I think this side of the story is not sufficiently well appreciated because of the frustration that is very easy to have against Erdogan for a lot of the other unhelpful things that he's doing. But the YPG certainly had its own agenda. It was seeking to create a large autonomous region by connecting three northern Syrian cantons. And so there were Syrian Arabs who were complaining that the YPG had been displacing them from the territory where they lived. This area is in northeastern Syria, and it borders the southeastern part of Turkey, where the vast majority of its population lives. And so the Turkish government has certainly had concerns about the ability of fighters to move across the border, of weapons to move across the border, and it also has concerns about the fact that emboldening the YPG could end up emboldening the PKK to renew their fight against the Turkish state. And so the Turks certainly see this as an existential security threat.
Could this compel the Kurds to align themselves more with Iran and, for that matter, Assad in Syria?
The YPG has never disassociated themselves from the regime in Syria. And so certainly a likely outcome of the Turkish incursion is that the YPG could end up renewing their ties with the regime and try to strike some sort of deal with the regime in terms of getting their support for holding this territory in Syria and pushing back on the Turks. Remember that we still are a long ways away from a political settlement to the conflict in Syria. There's lots of things to be worked out in terms of constitutional arrangements, governance, and security arrangements. The reality is that the YPG holds a large swath of territory, but there still are outstanding issues about who is going to govern that space. And certainly some sort of renewed affiliation between the YPG and the regime is a very plausible outcome of this situation.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I had alluded to the fact that a political settlement in certainly President Obama's mind, his administration, would have included somehow the removal of Bashar al-Assad. And here's a tweet from a listener. It says, if Syrian President Bashar al-Assad were overthrown, what would be the result? Look at Iraq and Libya. Do we want the same result? I think that's also a fair point. Don't you agree, Amanda?
There's certainly been lots of questions about that. I think in the early days of this conflict, there was an expectation that Assad was going to fall quickly, as some of the other dictators across the region had. Certainly many years later, it is clear that the regime is regaining control of the vast amount of Syria, and the governance mechanisms are not in place to allow a peaceful transition of power. That said, I think the only ultimate solution to the situation in Syria is going to be a political one rather than a military one. And so efforts need to continue towards coming up with some sort of resolution that addresses some of these governance and security questions in the longer term.
Another caller joining us. That's you, Ron. You're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, I think we should take a broader perspective of what's happening here. It's important to recognize that Russia is weaponizing immigrants. They basically weaponized immigrants to destabilize the economies and the societies in Eastern and the rest of Europe, and pushing those to be more into an authoritarian mode, and recognizing that Russia is a kleptocracy, and they benefit with the removal of the rule of law in areas. And what they want to do is separate us from our alliance partners, the Kurds, even us and the Turks. They're doing everything they can with their military sales to separate us from the Turks and the Kurds, because essentially we are more vulnerable as just 6% of the world than we are as the leader of a giant, you know, alliance pyramid that was set up after World War II.
Ron, let me cut in here because we're really short on time and get a quick response from Amanda Sloat. Amanda?
I think he's right that Russia is the one that is benefiting from a lot of this chaos. There's currently tensions between the U.S. and Turkey over its plan to purchase Russian S-400s. And all of these calls to kick Turkey out of NATO in response to this are really problematic, because the only country that benefits from that is Russia, along with others that don't want Turkey as part of the West.
We'll have to leave it there. Amanda Sloat, always good to have you. Thank you so much for joining us. Amanda Sloat
Thank
is
you.
With the Brookings Institution. We also spoke earlier with Nabi Bulos, Middle East correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. And when we return, we're going to update you on PG&E cutoffs, and we're also going to hear a young woman doctor who solved her own disease and got her health back. That's up ahead. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.